from London, BBC Caribbean Report.
Jamaica wins a seat on the United Nations Security Council. Regional cooperation leads to a clampdown on the illicit drug trade. And Cuban officials evacuate more than 100,000 people as Hurricane Irene made her approach. I am Keith Stonegraves, and this is BBC Caribbean Report. A Caribbean country now holds a seat on the powerful United Nations Security Council. Jamaica was elected unopposed today to serve on the prestigious body for the next 2 years. Jamaica's nomination had the full backing of other Caribbean and Latin American nations. The General Assembly in New York also voted in Bangladesh, Mali, Tunisia, and Ukraine. Mark Davenport is the BBC's UN correspondent. I asked him, what does this all mean for Jamaica and, by extension, the Caribbean?
Well, it means that Jamaica is going to be sitting at the distinctive horseshoe table of the UN Security Council in New York from the beginning of next year on. And that means that Jamaica will be there in what is probably the most powerful body within the UN, deciding on what should happen when international disputes occur, whether peacekeeping forces should be sent around the world. And clearly the fact that Jamaica has been lobbying now since, I think, the beginning of 1997 to get a place in the Security Council shows that it's important to the country, as it is important to a number of countries around the world.
Was the vote in Jamaica's favour generally expected?
It was expected. What happened is that Jamaica is part of a bloc of Caribbean and Latin American nations, and they basically sorted it out before it actually got to the formal vote, who their candidate would be for the seat which Brazil is vacating at the end of the year. In fact, Paraguay had said that it wanted to be the next candidate for the seat, but in May of this year, it dropped out of the competition, and that left Jamaica to be endorsed after informal talks between Latin American and Caribbean countries. So when it came to it, there was really no opposition for that particular seat, and Jamaica got 171 votes out of a possible 172. One country seemed to have just spoilt their ballot by accident.
Jamaica's election to the UN Security Council, is this a sign that things might be changing as far as the developing nations are concerned?
You do get a number of small nations coming through from time to time. Indeed, Jamaica was on the Security Council back in 1979-80, but it's clearly an opportunity, I think, for Jamaica to raise its particular concerns. Countries that are on the Security Council at the moment pursue their own interests in general terms, and Jamaica has had a strong interest, for instance, in human rights and decolonization, and one would expect when their ambassador Patricia Durant is sitting there at the horseshoe table that she'll try to use her position to some extent to pursue long-term national interests.
Mark Davenport in New York. Meanwhile, Caribbean reaction to Jamaica's election on the UN Security Council has been swift. St. Lucia's UN ambassador, Julian Hunt, says it's a good opportunity for the region to get its concern on the global agenda.
Primary issue right now would be the Caribbean Sea being treated as a special place. The whole question of whether they should continue to ship nuclear waste through the Caribbean, the problems that we would have in the event of an accident, and whereas we were told in the past that it was kind of accident proof, recent events in Japan in nuclear leaks prove that, you know, our fears are well grounded.
Julian Hunt. The EU-ACP meeting ends in the Bahamas this evening. Officials have been looking at the future of the Lome Trade and Aid Pact. On Wednesday, the chairman of the West Indies Rum and Spirits Producers Association, Patrick Mayers, expressed his concern about the future of the industry.
There needs to be a special fund agreed and set aside for rum, rum specific, and that's what we are arguing for. And they have done a similar thing for bananas, and they recently agreed in the South African Free Trade Agreement, they have agreed with the South Africans to set aside a sum of money to assist them, specifically their spirits industry, through a period of transition because of the acknowledged disruption that they will be caused to that industry.
Well, Carl Bethel is the Bahamian Economic Development Minister. He heard the comments by Mr. Mayer, so what does he think?
They were very timely, and they accurately reflected the sentiment throughout the Caribbean rum industry and the position of Caribbean states. We wouldn't wish to see the Caribbean producers of rum, who have been making rum in this region for over 300 years, placed in a position that is disadvantageous when compared to the position and the preferential treatment being offered to other producers of alcoholic beverages who have relations with Europe.
Have representatives reached agreement on any of the other key areas of discussion at this meeting, for example, immigration and human rights?
The Joint Assembly just today approved the resolutions surrounding the Kinnock report on the future of ACP-EU cooperation, a large part of which dealt with issues of human rights, good governance, and alternative trading arrangements to the European Union proposal of these REPAs, or Regional Economic Partnership Arrangements. And this almost unanimous approval that has been evinced on the part of the ACP for the use of alternative trading arrangements and its acceptance by the Joint Assembly really opens the door to the negotiators on both parts to structure acceptable alternative arrangements to the Lomé Convention so that by February of 2000 we ought to have an acceptable, workable international convention capable of accession to by all parties.
Just weeks before the Seattle meeting of the WTO, poor countries are accusing the rich nations of failing to honor their obligations. Does this worry you as a Caribbean official?
Yes, it does. And it's very unfortunate that world events, and particularly those involving multilateral trade, have taken such a disturbing turn of events of late. The sacrificing of the banana-producing countries of the Eastern Caribbean on this altar of unrestricted free trade subject to WTO rules is very alarming to us all, because what it is saying is that if a country is small, if it is not able to properly represent its case, if it cannot make the social case a part of the economic discussion, then only pure economic principles will always mean that the poor will suffer at the expense of the rich.
Carl Bethel. American drug enforcement officials say that following the successful Operation Columbus, similar sting operations to combat drug trafficking in the Caribbean are being planned. During the 12-day exercise across the entire sub-region, over 1,200 people were arrested and nearly 1,000 tons of cocaine seized. U.S. Special Agent Michael Vigil told me the aim is to continue to build upon a comprehensive regional strategy utilizing many of the lessons learned from Operation Columbus.
We can work together, given the diverse cultures and political infrastructures, to impact significantly on the flow of drugs from producer countries through the Caribbean. In this case, as you know, in Operation Columbus, we had participation from Venezuela, Colombia, and also Panama. So we also were able to develop an operational nexus in terms of sharing information and working with one another with those specific countries in the Caribbean.
Mr. Vigil said that the drug problem in the region is serious, but through the cooperation of Caribbean governments, the ship rider agreement signed with the United States are now starting to bite.
I think that the ship rider agreements have had a significant impact in terms of drug trafficking activities that we conduct, and I think that we are seeing, you know, a significant results as a result of the ship rider agreements. It allows us to work closer with foreign governments and their you know, counter drug entities.
DEA Special Agent Michael V. Hill. You're listening to BBC Caribbean Report. Puerto Rico's non-voting representative to the United States Congress, Carlos Romero Barcelo, says the island's colonial status is impeding its progress. He's concerned that the U.S. Attorney General Janet Reno could order the use of force to remove protesters from the military training ground on Vieques. Puerto Ricans want the training area closed after a stray missile killed a civilian guard on the island in April. Earlier, I spoke to Mr. Barcelo in Washington, who said it would be a mistake for the authorities on the mainland to take any drastic action.
If we were a state, and we had two senators and seven congressmen. I'm sure that this wouldn't be happening. Nobody can imagine that the Navy would get away with bombing and doing maneuvers in a section of Martha's Vineyard off the coast of Massachusetts. There are going to be more people going there, more people moving in. As a result of that, they will feel that it would be the Navy and the United States using their force, which we don't have. So it's a situation that can deteriorate because people get more exacerbated, more frustrated. The Navy has completely ignored the memorandum of understanding that we signed when I was governor back in 1983. They have not made the people in Vieques feel part of the national defense at all.
But if the authorities on the mainland decide to carry out their action on Vieques, is there any way the Puerto Rican government can stop them?
We can try the courts, but we tried that way before, and the courts are reluctant to intervene. At least the last time, the court said that this was a political decision, not a judicial decision, whether the need for national defense, the national defense needs, would be a political question, not a judicial question.
When will Puerto Ricans know for sure if the military base on Vieques would be closed?
There's no deadline. The president appointed a panel to discuss this and to give recommendations to the Secretary of Defense, who would in turn then make recommendations to the president. We're still waiting. Those recommendations were supposed to come out in August. We're now in the middle of October, and they still haven't come out. There's rumors that they will be out in the next week on Tuesday, but we still haven't heard.
U.S. military officials insist that the base on Vieques is crucial for their training exercises. Can any alternative arrangement be found?
That's up to them. The Navy has to fight it. We don't know anything about their needs. We try to start looking for any alternative site. Every time we look for one, they'll say, oh, that doesn't qualify. Oh, that doesn't. I mean, we can't be playing, allow them to get us into playing those games.
Carlos Romero Barcelo. The United Nations General Assembly stood in silent tribute today to Julius Nyerere, who led Tanzania to independence. The world leader, recognized as one of Africa's great freedom fighters, died in London today at the age of 77. Emma Joseph looks back at his legacy.
He was once described by an American official as a new symbol of African dignity, hope, and success. But for Julius Nyerere, success took on a wholly different meaning. The former schoolteacher was deeply socialist as well as pan-Africanist. This was the guiding philosophy behind his leadership as president of Tanzania. And it was just a few of the many endearing features that he possessed. One man who remembers Nyerere very well is CARICOM's chief negotiator, Sir Sridath Ramphal.
He helped to shape an ethos of development, brought to the whole concept of development ethical values which have lingered long beyond his government. He had no trace of materialism about him in that sense, you know. I would not expect that he has left anything beside his bare necessities of life behind him.
It was this almost Gandhi-like humility and simplicity which so impressed statesmen. Many visitors to Nyerere's homeland in Tanzania would express shock when they saw his house. It literally was a humble home. His background may go some way in explaining his unique lifestyle. Nyerere was one of 26 siblings who grew up herding sheep in a typically rural tribal way of life. It was from these modest beginnings that Julius Nyerere went on to devote himself to a life of socialist politics. Many others, such as Jamaica's Michael Manley, Chile's Salvador Allende, and other leaders in the newly independent post-colonial world, were to gain great inspiration from Nyerere's lead right up to his retirement from office in 1985. Many have described him as the most influential African statesman of his generation.
Emma Joseph, Cuban officials were not taking any chances as Hurricane Irene crossed the western end of the island. More than 130,000 people were evacuated. Classes were suspended as a decades-old defense plan was mobilized. And finally, there's nothing unusual about an Earl going to visit the Queen, unless, of course, you're talking about Robbie Earl. The 34-year-old midfielder who scored for Jamaica's Reggae Boys in the World Cup last year collected his MBE from the Queen at Buckingham Palace earlier today. And that's it for BBC Caribbean Report. I am Keith Stonegrave saying goodbye from London.